Okay, so here we are, week number four. Another day, another dollar, here we go. So I told you guys last week we were going to endeavor to get into intimacy tonight, but I have a couple things I want to circle back around on, which has kind of been the theme so far along, just because as I go back and listen to it or as I go back and just think through, there's just so much. There's so many things that can be said, should be said, that I feel like I leave something out or I just need to clarify something. So am I going to offend anybody if I teach with a hat on? I just want to make sure, like, if I will take it off, but I mean, we're going to talk about sex all night, so if my hat bothers you, it's probably like the least of your concerns. But I seriously, if I'm going to offend anybody, because I understand we're in the sanctuary, I usually wouldn't do that, but I feel like this is, I mean, we've talked about a lot so far, so okay. I just want to make sure. It is what it is. Okay. So a couple things. This is week number four. At the end of tonight, we're going to be halfway done. And that seems crazy because it's like, man, I got a lot more things to be said. And at the same time, it feels like we're only halfway done because if you go back and just flip through some of the stuff we've looked at, I mean, we've went over a lot of stuff. I mean, enough that you ought to and should have maybe even grown some personally from this stuff. And so I just, how's it been? I guess that's my question. Is there anybody, I mean, if you hate it, at least wait till later to tell me you hate it. But I feel like people have told me that they are growing from it, that they're learning some things. Either you're lying to people or I keep hearing from people that aren't here. Hey, I hear the marriage thing's going really well. And I'm like, yeah, you ought to come. But it's just odd how many people you hear about, hey, I hear it's going really well. And I'm like, how'd you hear? But anyway, so there's that. So anyway, I want to circle back around for a second because if you've noticed, if you just look around, the number's quite a bit smaller than it was when we started. And that happens. And I understand there's certain people that are out for a wedding and there's different things going on tonight. And I know where a lot of the people are. But it's just natural when you start something that people are like zealous to do it, but then it just doesn't work out. And I'm not mad at anybody. It is what it is. The recordings are online, so if you've missed something, please go back and catch it. I would recommend go back and reading it again or listening to it again. Like, I'm teaching this stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's I should write that down. So I promise even hearing it a second time might be good. So anyway, it's the fourth week, and I feel like we have seen some things, but I don't want to get comfortable because that's what happens. Usually you start to get into a groove and it's like, okay, I'm just going through it. And so if you think back to when you signed up for this and I was trying to figure out what we were going to call this thing and, you know, I settled on redefining expectations. And one of the things that was kind of on, I wanted to be on the sign up was basically a study that would cause you to go all in for your spouse and for the Lord. Right, and that was one of the phrases because I really do hope that this causes you to take that next step to be like, I really do want to be a better husband. I really do want to be a better wife. I don't want to just hear these things, but I actually want to grow. And so I feel like it's been okay. And so I guess my question for you, and I don't need you to respond, but are you all in? I feel like there's probably some of us that really are. I'm teaching this stuff, but yet Paige and I have found time every week to actually sit down and talk about the things that we're supposed to talk about. And it's been good for us. Like, this week we had something going on Thursday night. What do you know about that? So we filled the one night a week that we didn't have something going on. But God blessed us with a 2-hour and 10-minute car drive to the football game last night. So I'm like, hey, it's a really good time for us to talk. So anyway, I say all that to say, and I'm not trying to get in anybody's grill, but I also want to be the one that challenges you. If you're not doing these things, do them. Because here's what I'll say. I might not notice, but I promise your spouse does. I promise your spouse knows that when you signed up, they were like, hey, we're going to grow a little bit here, but we can't find time to do the little task, or we can't find time to, and so I'm just trying to help you out as gently as I can. I might not notice, but I guarantee your spouse does. You said you wanted to be all in, so be all in. And so I'm not trying to, like, start the night with being in anybody's grill, but, like, we're halfway. I just wanted to kind of revisit that because I don't know what the context was, but it was just today Paige and I were talking. And I said, you know, the funny thing is people will always make time for what's important to them. It doesn't matter what it is. People will always make time for what's important to them. So anyway, so that I just wanted to kind of to go through that. And then there's one other thing I want to clarify from last week. We went through kind of our job description as a husband and a wife and the couple as a whole. So go back and listen to that if you missed it. There were different points. But one of the points, as we were talking last night on the drive up to the football game, was we were talking about a helpmeet, right? And it says in Genesis that God creates a woman, and he says, you know, I want you to be the man's helpmeet, right? And we talked a little bit about that, and I referenced a book, and I was like, I've seen Paige read this book. It must be good. And so I want to, rewind the tape and be like, I'm not going to recommend that book. If you want to read it, that's fine. But I don't want to say Paige recommends this because she's like, I've read it, but I don't know that it's something I would stick my name out there for. And so, and I get that, and I don't want that to be on the record to say, hey, we are all in with this. Not very often, let's be honest, not very often do I read a book, and then, and even more so than that, not very often do I read one, and I'm like, I'm pretty much on point with this one. And we're actually going to talk about one of those tonight. But so as far as that book created to be a helpmeet, there's some good things in it, is what we were talking about, but I don't know that I would. She said something that really relates to me, and she's like, the lady tries really hard to push her convictions as somebody else's doctrine. You know, just because she's convicted about it, she wants everybody else to make it doctrine in their life, and we don't want that. And so, and another thing that we kind of had talked about, and we have talked about this many times before, and too often in the culture we live in, a woman thinks that, well, I'm a helpmeet, so that means, you know, I have to be a, and this book actually references some of these, I have to be a stay-at-home mom, and I have to homeschool my kids, and I can't have a job outside the home, and all these things, and if I do those things, then I'm being less of a woman. And so that's definitely not what I wanted to come across, and I don't want anybody to lump us into that. To be a helpmeet is actually to meet your husband's needs, whatever that is. And so a woman isn't specifically created to be a helpmeet because she's not created to be married. I mean, she can be single. That's okay. You can worship God first. But once you decide to get married, now your primary earthly goal, besides worshiping the Father, is to your husband, okay? And so if your husband says, it's really important to me to have dinner every night, then that's what her main goal is, as a helpmeet. Or if her husband says, it's really important to me that you have a job outside the home so that we can have more money, then that is what her primary goal is. If he says that, I think it would be wise for our family for you to homeschool our kids, then that's, you see what I'm saying? It's whatever you and your husband decide. A helpmeet can be a lot of different things depending on what you are as a husband, right? And so everybody's different. Every man is different. Every season of life needs a different thing. And so I just want to make sure I kind of clarify that whole thing. The whole helpmeet thing can get really confusing, and it almost seems belittling to women, and I definitely don't want that to be the case. And so whatever your husband needs, I mean, you're created to be a helper to him once you get married. And so help him out in whatever that is, because he needs help. I'll just be honest. You know, I know I do. And so anyway. Okay, so that's two clarifications. And I've done as much stalling as I can before we're going to get into the inevitable. So tonight, we're going to talk about intimacy, right? Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things in the, whatever. I promise, my life is lived through song lyrics. I could do this whole thing through song lyrics if you really wanted me to. So, I'm not nervous about this. I'm nervous for y'all. It really doesn't bother me. I told you from the very get-go, I was going to speak very candidly, and I'm going to say some things tonight that might make you blush, and it is what it is. I'm going to say some things that, let's just say, it's going to vary widely. I'm not going to say anything that is vulgar, okay? We're not talking about sex positions or anything like that. We're not going down that road, okay? The point here is I'm going to be very black and white with y'all about what the Bible says about sex and intimacy in a marriage, and that's where we're at. And so if you're a single person and this is like, I don't really know, feel free to go hang out with the kids tonight or something. I don't know. I send Mitch and Jody in here. I don't know. I don't want to offend anybody, but there's varying degrees of what we're going to talk about, and it all needs to be said because this is what marriage is in its picture. And so anyway, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a disclaimer. I don't want to offend anyone, but it might happen. I am not here to offend anyone. I'm here to just simply tell you the truth of what I have learned. I am here to not try to make my wife blush. I'm going to do my best to not give personal examples. That's not what this is about. But I do want to be very clear with a lot of things. We're going to be very black and white. So I've recently read a book. Okay, I will recommend this book. Nearly everything I read in this entire book, I would agree with 100%. There was like one thing in there, and if you read it, see if you can figure it out. It's called Sheet Music. I would recommend that you read it. I would recommend that you buy this book. It's like 10 or 15 bucks on Amazon, and read it with your spouse. It is that good. It is spot on, and it says things that you really would blush if I said in here. So there are things that, I mean, it goes a little deeper than what we're going to talk about, but I think we're going to get plenty deep. But
so much so that this is a psychologist that wrote this, and he even says, if you're single, read the first four chapters, and then read the chapter for him and the chapter for her, and do not touch the rest of the book until you're married.
So it's good. I would recommend it, and I'm not much of a book kind of guy, but it's worth the read. It will benefit your marriage greatly. So anyway, okay, that's the disclaimer. So here we're going to do a little say it out loud to make sure everybody's in on this. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to look at anyone other than your spouse in the eyes. And here's what I want you to say to them. God created sex. Right? Right? It's easy to say it to your spouse, right? What? I looked over at Brady. Okay. This isn't, I mean, we're not like fourth graders anymore, okay? God created this thing. Okay, so again, look at somebody other than your spouse and tell them sex is not bad. Okay. And the last thing I want you to do is look at your spouse if they're here and tell them, I want you.
Yeah, I do.
I want you to listen up tonight. Yes, that's it. Look at your spouse.
I want you to listen up.
Okay. So that's where we're, okay, it's going to be awkward, and that's okay. I'm not blushing. It is what it is. So tonight's going to be good. God has really given me some good things. Some of this stuff is kind of out of that book. I didn't go and like reference any of it. This is just stuff that I had residual in my head. So if it seems like I extol from the book, it's because it's something I actually learned when I read it a couple months ago. And so you can't like say I copyrighted it because it was just something that's in my head. So anyway, a lot of it's there, but a lot of this is stuff that God showed me as well. So let's pray real quick and we'll get moving. I've already decided that, just so you know, we're not going to get done tonight. So we get to talk about sex some more next week because there's too much to say and I don't want to rush through this because who wants to rush sex? So anyway, it's okay to laugh. Let's pray. Father, I love you. I thank you for today. I thank you for being good. I thank you for all the things that have happened here at HBF even today. There were a lot of guests here for the harvest party, and I really do feel like you're gaining some traction here with what you're doing at Heartland, and I thank you for allowing us to be a part of it. There's so many people that are in this room that just labored mightily today, and I pray that as we switch gears tonight and we focus on our marriage just for a little bit, that we would hear from you. There's a lot of things that could be said when we talk about intimacy, Lord, but I pray that these would be your things, that these would be things that would truly grow us to be better intimately with our spouse so that we can better picture you in the church. And I pray that this wouldn't be something that is offensive, but Lord, this would really be something that would help us grow. I pray you'd speak through me tonight, be with those who are out for whatever reason that as they catch this stuff online or whoever is catching it. I pray you just bless their marriage richly, bless the marriage that they're praying to be in richly, Lord. And I just pray even for the singles, this is important stuff because Man, when you decide to marry somebody, you're signing up to have sex with them for the rest of your life. So it's a big decision. Lord, I pray you speak to us tonight in Christ's name. Amen. That's one thing singles need to realize. Like, we're going to take a night, and not a night, but a part of a night, and talk about, like, choosing a spouse. But since we're on the topic of sex, when you're choosing a spouse, I know that physical attraction shouldn't be the number one thing, but hopefully it's at least a little, hopefully you are a little bit, like, physically attracted. You are going to sleep with this person for the rest of your life. You know, I mean, it helps. It doesn't have to be that way. I understand that, but I'm just saying, like, it's a bonus. So, all right, so here we go. Sex. Sex is one of the most influential factors in our marriages. Would you agree with that? It just is. You cannot agree with it, and I'm going to tell you it is. So why do I say the word influential, though? Because when it's good, it can influence us personally to be better, right? When you have a healthy sex life, it influences you personally to be a better fill-in-the-blank father, employee, all of these things. You feel empowered, all of these things, right? But because when it's bad, it can also influence us to personally feel defeated, self-conscious, all of these things, right? And so when you look at your intimate life, your sex life, so when I say sex life, I'm not going to disclaimer this all night. It is what it is. I understand in the confines of a marriage, it is more than just sex, but let's just use the word as it is, okay? And I understand you're in a marriage, it is two people coming together in a physical loving relationship. I get all of that. I don't ever look at Paige and say, hey, do you want to have sex? But just for getting the point across tonight, understand that's what I'm saying, okay? So no more disclaimers. So it's influential because when you have a healthy relationship physically with your spouse, and I understand we're from a lot of different, and I say this because I'm not as young as I used to be, age ranges in here. And it changes throughout the years, okay? I'm going to speak generally, and then we'll also, when we get towards the end of this thing, I will wrap up and talk about how some of that changes as we get older, okay? So if you're like, well, that doesn't hit me, we're getting there. So just understand that. So anyway, when you have a healthy sexual relationship with your spouse, it makes you feel emboldened, empowered. I'm no longer wondering why my spouse isn't attracted to me or isn't desiring me, and instead I can focus on spending time with the kids. I can focus on taking care of the things I need to do at home. I can focus on all these other things because that's not in the back of my head all the time. Wonder what's going on here. That's one thing that Paige and I understand is like when something's broke between us, like my whole life is broke. I can't hardly function. And so some people do fine, but I don't. And so, but when it's not good, it's hard to get anything done. And so that's why I say that sex is one of the most influential aspects of our marriages, okay? So let me ask you this. Why do you think that is? I just told you what it does to us, but why do you think that is? Now, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know anything about the brain other than it's gray and it's mushy, right? That's all I can tell you about a person's brain. And I don't even know that it's mushy. I've just been told that. But I'm not a psychologist, but here's how I would answer that. Why do I think why is that? Here's my answer. Because with sex, you're completely out there. No pun intended. Like, it's all out there. I mean, you've let it all hang out. And I don't mean that this is all I got. I don't have an ace in the hole. This is it. With sex, you're completely out there, completely vulnerable to them. And when that goes well, we feel empowered. When that goes well, we feel like I'm accepted. We feel like I am what they desire. We feel those things, right? Empowered, confident, secure. But when it goes bad, when our sexual relationship seems like it's rocky or not really there at all, we feel humiliated or weak or insecure or unwanted. And like, it's something that plays in our brain. And again, I'm not one to try to tell you what happens in a person's brain. I'm not a psychologist. I don't know. But I can tell you what I've seen in people, okay? And so with this logic, we can see why this statement is very true, right? We can see why this statement is very true. Quote-unquote good sex leads to much more sex. But quote-unquote bad sex leads to no sex. in general, in a married person's life, I've heard this through counseling classes, I've heard this through personal experience counseling with people. When you have a good, healthy sexual relationship and things are going good, what does that usually lead to? Well, more good, healthy sexual relationship. But when it seems like things are bad, when things are rocky, when things aren't that well, it seems like the cure-all is we just won't do that at all. We won't talk about it. Well, that's not healthy for anybody, okay? And so with this logic of, well, it seems like when things are good, I feel, you know, good and empowered, and if I can feel like that, and if this makes us feel better as a couple and us feel like we can get more accomplished in life and we feel better about ourselves, then we should do that more often. But if it's going to make us feel defeated, if it's going to make us feel like we're less of a person and less of whatever it is that we desire to be, then maybe we just won't do that anymore. Okay, so it kind of makes one leads to the other, right? It's kind of all tied together. And I promise I'm getting somewhere with this. So here's kind of the question of the night, and you don't have to write this down, but this is kind of where I'm leading to as we get there. So if we understand that good sex leads to more sex and bad sex leads to really no sex, here's the question of the night. How do we have good sex instead of bad sex, right? If one is like this and one is like this, and we understand that this leads to pretty much everything good and this leads to pretty much everything that's not, okay, well then what's the magic potion here? What leads to the good and not the bad? And we'll just go down that road. Well, how do we have more sex instead of no sex? That's the question. So here's something I heard one time at a marriage conference, and it's always stuck in my head, right? And the person said, if sex is free and it's fun, then why don't we have more free fun in our marriage, right? We're always looking for something to do. We're always looking for somewhere to go. Like going to the movies costs money. Going to dinner, I'm saying it ain't as cheap as it used to be, right? Even going to watch the kids play football costs money to get in. I'm just saying if sex is free and it's fun, we should have more free fun. I mean, that's just something I've heard, and I've kind of just always thought that in my life. So it's okay to laugh, right? It is what it is, guys. Anyway. So here's what we're going to see tonight. And I don't think we're going to get all the way through this, and that's okay. We'll pick it up next week. But here's kind of our outline that we're going to go through. I'm going to give you what I have titled the Good Sex How-To Manual. I'm going to give you the Good Sex How-To Manual, right? And that's what we're going to look at tonight. I'm going to give you 8 how-tos that will lead your marriage to better intimacy. And these are not my things. These are God things, right? But if you're an outline kind of person, this is the Good Sex How-To Manual, and I'm going to give you 8 how-tos that will lead your marriage to better intimacy. And I promise none of it will be too graphic, so, you know, you're welcome. Here's the first thing, and I'm already prepared to not get done, so anybody that's like watching the clock and like, oh my gosh, we're never going to, if we need to stop, we'll stop, because I said this to somebody in the foyer, I'm like, you don't really want to have to rush through talking about sex and like, well, really anything to do with sex. And so, you know, that's just not what you want. I was in D2 the other night, and I said, somebody asked me how preparation was coming for this week because I mentioned that we were going to be talking about intimacy. And I'm like, honestly, I haven't even gotten started on it. So this week might be a little short and, unprepared and kind of short. And one of the guys in there, because this is how guys think, they were like, huh, 2 things you don't want in the bedroom. You know, I mean, if you can't laugh, it is what it is. So here's your first how-to, how to see God's mind on God's design, how to see God's mind on God's design. is there a true quote unquote godly sex? Is there a true holy sex? Is there, you know, some people are like, sex just feels dirty and weird and I don't know what it's like for you, but it's, anyway, is there a true godly sex? That's the question we kind of are trying to answer with this. Yes, absolutely there is. When we do sex God's way, it's so much more than just physical pleasure. Right, when you do a sexual intimacy in your godly marriage, it is so much more than just a pleasurable experience. God designed sex Right? We understand that. We said that at the beginning. God, this was God's idea from the get-go. God designed it. So get it out of your mind that it for whatever reason, is bad or wrong or whatever else. And we're going to get to that to the next point in a minute. But if this was God's plan, if you have your Bibles, you can flip here. If not, I'll just read it to you. We are going to spend more time in the Word, but it's mostly in one passage. But in Genesis 2, we're just going to reference this really quick. Genesis chapter 2, and verse 21 and 25, we referenced this last week. And it says, "And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed the flesh instead thereof. And the rib, which the Lord God had taken from man, made he a woman, and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, 'This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. He shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man.'" Now remember, we looked at this last week, and it was like, you know, this is a zebra. Nah, that's probably not for me. This is a cow. This is probably not for me. So he creates a woman, right? And he's like, okay, this is what I have for you. And then what's it say in the very next verse? In verse 24, it says, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife." Well, how'd she become his wife? Well, apparently there was a marriage here, right? This was the first marriage. It says, she shall leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. What does that mean? It means they had they consummated that thing, right? You understand the picture. I'm not going to get there, but when two become one, something's going on there, right? You know, it's not a square peg, round hole kind of thing anymore, right? It's designed to fit well, and so it says they will be one flesh, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. So God designed this thing. This is God's plan. God could have said from the very beginning, okay, Adam, here's your wife, and to have intimacy, you're going to like rub backs, right? Or to have intimacy or to procreate, you're going to look at each other really deeply. And God could have done anything, but this was his design. Really good design, by the way. But this was God's plan. It was his thing. Step one, God says, if you want to do this thing godly, if you want to have a godly sexual relationship in your marriage, he says, step one, get married. Right there, it says it right there. He says, here's the woman. What's the very next thing they do? They get married, right? It doesn't say, you know, I'm not even going to go there. Never mind. He says, get married, right? It says, leave father and mother. Leave and cleave. You leave mom and dad, ladies, husbands, whoever struggles with that. You leave that and you cleave to your wife, right? To your husband. Okay. You're now married. That's step one. Step two in God's plan of godly sex is be one flesh. But how do I do that? Well, he says right here. He says, step two, be one flesh. How do I do that? Step three, get naked. I bet you'll figure it out from there, right? I don't know anybody. I mean, does anybody want to be bold enough? There's like, well, we were naked, but we couldn't figure it out. For whatever reason, we just generally figure that out. I mean, I'm not, it just, get married, be one flesh. How's that work? Get naked. I bet you'll figure it out. It was God's design. If that's God's design, and I would say, good job, God, by the way. That's good design, right? I couldn't have thought of anything better myself, right? If that was God's design, then what is his mind on his design? Because that's what we're talking about. I want to get God's mind on his design. It's very easy to say this is God's design. But what is his mind on this thing? What is God's thought process? How's this thing supposed to work? And so I'm going to give you a few things here. This is what we'll see the rest of the way, right? I'm going to give you a lot of these things in more depth, but just to get to the point, right? So let's point out a few things about God's mind on sex before we get too far. Here's the first kind of sub point on God's mind on sex. Sex is only for the married. I don't know who I'm saying that to, but it needs to be said. Sex is only for the married. I don't know how else to say this without being, those who try it before they buy it, you're going to reap the consequences later. You know how many times, and I'm not like a senior pastor, I don't see a lot of this, but I've heard a lot of stories, so don't think that like Pastor Brian's telling us stories, but I've heard a lot of stories of, you know, the worst marriage problems that we deal with, or you know, as we've taken counseling classes and different things, this comes back to haunt people over and over and over again. You're like, what do you mean? It's not that big of a deal. We just got married. It's all good. Later in your marriage, it seems like over and over again, having premarital sex comes back to haunt you. It just comes back and it rears its ugly head in a lot of different ways. So I'm just telling you, this is God's mind. Sex is for married people. You want to have sex, get married. That's what Paul says in Ephesians or 1 Corinthians chapter 7. He's like, instead, if you're burning, and he's talking about like your loins are burning, you've been there, you better find somebody to get married to, because if not, you're going to be in sin pretty quick. I'm just saying, that's what it's so. The first thing you need to understand about God's mind on sex is it's for the married. There's no, subpoint A says, that's a black and white statement. Sex is for married people, okay? To the same people, like the person you're married to. I shouldn't have to say that, but it's a messed up world we live in. Okay, the second thing that's like God's mind on his design is sex is holy. When I say holy, when you read the word holy, it means dedicated or consecrated, right? So sex is holy. It's dedicated or consecrated. When you consecrate yourself exclusively to your spouse, that's God's mind on his design. It's easy to say, hey, this piece fits into this piece nicely. I don't know any other way to say this. I'm guessing that piece would fit into somebody else's piece as well. The point here is God's mind is for it to be holy, consecrated to one person. The design, it's not like unique to each individual person. You get the picture here. The point is, God's mind is it's for married people and it's for holy purposes. You are consecrated to one spouse. When you, I can't say this, and I don't know if anybody in this room can say this, and hopefully you can. I don't need to raise the hands, but if I was able to say, like, I had only, had sexual relations with one person in my life, that would be, like, amazing to me to know that, because it would just seem like it was that much more pure. Okay, but we understand sin happens, sin sucks, and it is what it is, and we move forward from today moving forward. That's all we can do, right? We can't change the past. We all understand that. All we can do is decide this is what I'm going to do from today moving forward. Now, if you continue to every day be like, yeah, I can't do that again, I can't do that again, at some point you're not repentant, you're just, well, not smart, let's just say that. The point here is consecrate yourself. If your spouse knows, like, I'm at a point now in my relationship with my wife that, like, there could be a situation that seemed like all the writing was on the wall pointing to the wrong thing, and I wouldn't think for a second that something would have ever been up. I could be in a situation, which I do my best to never get in these situations, so much so that, like, I go overly above and beyond to not put myself in situations where I could be accused of not being blameless, but I could be in a situation where I was in, and there could be accusations. And I feel like, you know, Paige might not be like, that probably wasn't smart, but there's never going to be a point where she's like, did that really happen? Why? Because there's a level of holiness. There's a level of consecration in our marriage at this point that says that, like, it's all yours. Why would I even attempt to look somewhere else, to go somewhere else? It doesn't even make sense. So do you get the picture here? When your spouse has that confidence in you, man, there's something to that. And you might be like, well, I don't have that. That only comes by living it day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out, okay? So it just happens. Like, okay, so that's the second thing. So sex is only for the married. It's holy. And the last thing, God's mind on his design of sex is sex is spiritual. You might be like, what? Sex is spiritual. It really is. God should play a part in the marriage bed. And you might be like, say, what? God should play a part in the marriage bed, right? Have you ever, like, prayed with your spouse before there was intimacy? You know, God, I really pray that you know, I understand. Like, I'm not the guy here that's like, oh, we are so holy that every time we get in bed together, we're like, no, we need to pray for it. Like, I understand. Sometimes it's like, hey, we understand what we're here for. I desire, you desire, let's go, right? But the point here is, like, there should be, what? Okay. But no, there's, seriously, though, we understand. Like, every sexual encounter is different. There are some that's like, hey, we've got X amount of minutes. there are some that's like, we have all night, and we understand the picture that we're here for, and we'll get into this in a different section. But the point is, like, ask God to anoint what's happening. Like, the whole picture of marriage in general is to picture Christ in the church. We are to be one flesh. God, we talked about this last week or the week before, I can't remember. God sees us as one now, and so we are the bride of Christ. And so, you know, you understand the picture here? It's a spiritual thing. Now, I understand, again, like, not every time is going to be like the most spiritual thing ever, but I'm saying if there's no spiritual anything going on here, there's something wrong. God designed it. Yeah, we all figured that out. The lost world seemed to figure it out too. But they haven't figured out how to do it God's way. And they haven't figured out how to get God's blessing on it. And that's where it's at. I'm just saying. Okay, so how to see God's mind on God's design. You understand? God's design, we understand. It's really nice, fits well. But God has a mind for it too. We just looked at that, okay? So the next one, the next point, the next how-to. This is how-to number two. Apparently, I haven't been very clear in my teaching because my wife isn't tracking the outlines very well, but I'll do my best. How to understand a different language. How to understand a different language. Here's what I mean by that. And maybe you are aware of this. Men and women are very different. Men and women are so, so very different. In some ways, I'm like, that's really awesome because, you know, I look at her and I'm like, dang, that looks good. But in other ways, I'm like, why can't you be a little more like me? Well, because that's not how God designed it, okay? Men and women are very different in good ways and in better ways. We won't ever say in bad ways, right? I'll never say that we're different in a bad way. I'll say we're different in good ways and in better ways, right? Understand that. Never in bad ways. God designed male and female exactly the way he wanted to. Understand that, right? Exactly the way he wanted to. God designed male and female exactly the way he wanted to. And praise the Lord, we're not all cookie cutter people. I love the fact that everybody looks different, right? I love the fact that nobody looks like my wife. It just is what it is. Because I've got an eye for my wife, and I hope nobody else does, because there's going to be a problem, right? And it's just, that is the way that it is. God makes everybody different. That's awesome, right? He made us exactly the way he wanted to, right? He made us male and female physically, right? Amen. I look at my wife and I'm like, yes, he made you physically just like he wanted to. Amen, right? He made you mentally just the way he wanted to. Now, some people are like, I don't really want to amen that, because sometimes I'm just like, I wish they were a little more like, okay, it is what it is, right? He made us spiritually just the way he wanted to, or at least able to be spiritually the way, you know, we can be that way. He made us exactly like what he wanted us to be. Right, and so a few weeks ago, and I don't want to, I'm going to actually put this together where you guys can see the results, but I had you guys fill out like this little thing, and I had a bunch of questions. Was there anybody not here that night that we filled out the little questionnaire thing? Okay, so basically, you got to pick your top three things that you would feel loved by your spouse, and I didn't make the instructions very clear because that's how my brain works, and Paige was like, you could have just said it like this, and I'm like, yeah, that would have made much more sense. So anyway, she did, and she told me, and I'm like, yeah, that makes more sense. We basically just took your three choices and just gave them each a point, okay? And so I'm just going to give you just a little bit, because I think you understand. My wife and I, we're different, right? We're just created different. We desire different things sometimes. And coincidentally enough, one of the very top things for both people, usually they're drastically different, was to have quality time with no distractions, right? For male and female, I think the females, it was the top thing, and for males, it was like the second to top thing, to have quality time with no distractions. Now, I will say this. I think those things mean very differently to each person, right? I think a guy's mind of quality time with my spouse with no distractions means something different than her thinking to me, quality time with no distractions. I don't know that. I should have been more clear with the way I said things, but again, just so you kind of know, and I'll let you guys see this at some point, but oddly enough, I was surprised to know that the very top thing for guys, if you add all the things together, was to have someone use words or actions to tell them that you're doing a good job, right? That was the very top one for guys. They want to hear that you're doing a good job. We call that words of affirmation, right? I like to know that you support what I'm doing. It makes sense, right? I don't really love the phrase, but it is what it is. So oddly enough, just I don't want to go through this whole thing, but just so you can kind of see things, women, not a single time did they think one of my top three ways is for my husband to cook for me. Guys, I don't know what the deal is there. Not a single time were ladies like, man, if you just cook a meal for me. No, not a single time on there was that. Right? It is what it is. But here's what I kind of want to get to. When you look at, I had one on there that said to feel physical touch with no expectation of intimacy. That was one of the top things for ladies. One of the bottom things for guys. That's interesting, right? Because with guys, in general, I understand there's always an outlier, right? But in general, guys want physical touch to lead to something more. That's just the way it is. The second to top thing, number two for guys, was to have your wife or to have them pursue you sexually. Oddly enough, that was the very bottom for ladies, right? Do you understand? God has created us very, very differently, right? So here's what I want you to understand, and I want to put this all together so you guys can see it in a more concise way, but here's what I'm trying to tell you. I don't want you to think, guys, that your wives don't want sex, because that's not true. And ladies, I don't want you to think that all your husband ever wants is sex, because that's not true. I think the problem is there's a lack of communication, and we don't know how to explain ourselves, and so it turns into, if we just had more sex, and then she thinks all you ever want to do is have sex, and it turns into a bitterness battle when it's something that God has designed for us both to enjoy. So how do we figure this whole thing out, right? We understand. I don't think there's anybody in here that's just like, I would be fine if sex was not a thing. We weren't created that way. Now, there might be seasons of life where it's like that for males and females, right? Now, also, I'm just going to speak in generalities and just tell you, most younger men, probably 50 and younger, sex is very, very, very important to them. But there comes a time when all of a sudden it flip-flops, and it feels like the woman has to do all the chasing. It's all the way that we're created, okay? And so that's just generalities. But I want you to understand, you need to understand how to speak a different language. You need to understand that they might want the same thing. Here's something Paige and I have realized, and it has nothing to do with sex. A lot of times, we are trying to say the same thing, and we get so irritated at each other because we say it differently. And I'm like, that's not what I'm trying to say. And she's like, well, that's not what I said. And at the end of the day, we get to the end of the conversation, and it's like, so we're pretty much saying the same thing, we're just wording it differently. I'm like, yeah, if you would just say it like I said it, then it would make more sense, right? We need to understand, even in our physical intimacy, how to speak a different language. God made her different on purpose. God made him different on purpose. That's okay. That's actually good, right? I'm just saying, like, I don't want to sleep with somebody who looks like me. I want to sleep with somebody that looks like her. I'm glad that that's how that God designed it. So I need to understand that I want to sleep with somebody who also thinks like her. And she wants to sleep with somebody who thinks like me. Does that all make sense? We just have to figure it out. Okay, so when it comes, we desire the same thing, right? Only different. Does that make sense? We desire the same thing, only different. And we're going to talk about that. Generally, when it comes to sex, generally, I understand there's always an outlier. Women are, I'm going to give you some things, and then I'm going to tell you generally men are. And I think for the most part we'll understand these, but we also need to make sure we know what we think we know. Because it's one thing to know it, and it's another thing to actually act on what we know. Generally, when it comes to sex, women are emotional. That means the emotional leads them to the physical. When they feel like you love them and you are actually chasing after them, then it would be you'd be amazed at how much more often the pants come unbuttoned, right? Or however you want to say it. Like, I'm just saying, women, when it comes to sex, are emotional. The emotional leads them to the physical. I hope that you're tracking with me, right? Women are also generally mentally aware. What does that mean? It means that they don't have the same switch that we have. Like, when it comes time to, it's like, hey, the bedroom door's closed, that means the world is turned off. That doesn't work for them, right? When they hear the baby cry, you can be in the middle of something great, and it's like all of a sudden it's not great anymore because, like, the world is stopping over here. They're mentally aware of the world. of the things of, hey, I just got a text message. What does it say? And I'm like, they're teenagers. They'll figure it out, right? Whatever it is. Like, what they're mentally aware of the world, right? That's women. They are. They're aware of what's happening. They cannot just shut it off. Or actually, they can. It depends on what it is to you, but they can't shut their mind off. They can shut other things off. And I'm like, I don't understand how that works. But they're mentally aware. Another one, women generally, and I think you guys understand these things, but sometimes you have to hear what you think you know to be like, okay, so it really is what I've always thought, because now you can start to act on it. Generally, women are sensual. Sensual. It takes all senses working together to arouse them. It takes me touching her just right. It takes me talking to her just right, the right tone of voice. It takes me smelling just right, right? You've got to find the right cologne or whatever it is, or not smelling like whatever that is. Anyway, it takes all of the right things to get your wife going, right? Does that make sense? They're very sensual. It takes all the things. You got to work for it, and that's okay. I don't want it to be easy all the time, right? It's just, they're very sensual. It takes all the senses working together to arouse them. And here's one that I think you'll all track with. Women generally are like an oven. They are like an oven. It takes some time before they're hot and ready, right? It takes some time. You can't decide, hey, I want a pizza. 2 minutes later, it's done. It doesn't work like that. You got to turn this thing on. You got to like wait on it to preheat. And you get the picture. Come on. They're like an oven, okay? So that's women. They're very emotional. It leads to the physical. They're very mentally aware. They're very sensual. And they are, in my words, like an oven. Generally, when it comes to sex, men are very physical. The physical leads them to the emotional. If you want me to open up emotionally, then generally that happens after there's been some sort of physical, not always, but for the most part, for guys, when there's a good, healthy sexual relationship, I feel like I can talk to her about anything. I feel like I can open up about anything. It's just the complete opposite. For her, it's like all those things have to happen first, and I'm like, it just doesn't work like it. So we're different. You understand? So we are very physical. The physical leads to the emotional. Generally, when it comes to sex, we are mentally blinded. Right? We're not mentally aware. We are mentally blinded. You're the only thing in our world when it comes time for the door to be closed or for whatever going on. I don't care if there's a siren outside. It can wait, right? I am very mentally blinded. You're the only thing in my world right now. Is that a bad thing? No, it's just different, okay? You understand what I'm saying? Like, we're just created this way. You can't be mad at your spouse for how they were made. That's like saying, I'm mad at you because your hair's red. That's stupid. Like, you can't do that. It's like saying, hey, I'm mad at you because you're short. Well, I can't, like, take a pill and get taller. I don't know what you want me to do, right? For the most part, these are things that we are created to be. Now, I understand some of these things are things that we can grow in, but for the most part, don't look at your spouse and, you know, be mad at them for the way that they were created. Try to appreciate it. Okay, so we are physical. We're very mentally blinded. Generally, when it comes to sex, men are very visual. I think all the guys would agree with this. Amen. We are very visual. Just seeing the dress hit the floor and we're ready. Just seeing you walk out of the bathroom and I'm just saying, like, you didn't have to say a word. I honestly don't care what you smell like, right? No, I say that. Like, you understand what I mean. Like, I don't need all the senses going on. Like, whoa, would you look at that? Like, we are very visual. That's how we were created, okay? Like, don't be mad. It's just how it is. And last and not least, we're not like an oven. We're like a microwave. When it comes to sex, generally, we can be hot and ready whenever you want. Am I lying? I don't hear anybody that's like, you're so far off the mark, man. I know you because I am you. Okay, so what do we do with this? This is info. Most of us, for the most part, already knew this stuff. Like, I don't think anybody in here is like, I've never heard that before. Or I don't really, we know those things, but what do we do with it? Because just me telling you these things and laughing about it, that doesn't do us anything. Here's what you need to understand about these things. Just a couple things, we'll move to the next point. Remember, God created them this way. When your wife completely shuts off because she thinks that there's an emergency in the next room, God made her that way. She's made to be a nurturer. She's made to be a protector when it comes to things like that. Don't hate her for that. Love her for that, right? When your husband sees you walk through after taking a shower and he's all of a sudden ready for something and you're like trying to get out the door, God created him that way. Don't be mad at him. He's just enamored with you. Why are you irritated? Why are you mad? He's enamored with what God has given him. Right? God created him this way. And here's what you need to do with these things that we just talked about. If you want to grow through something like this, here's what you need to do. Try to find ways to appreciate them, even though you might not completely understand. Try to find ways to appreciate those traits in them, even though you don't understand them. Ladies, when your husband hears somebody beating on the front door and he says, the kids will answer it, right? Appreciate that because he is so consumed with you that there is nothing that's going to take his mind off of it. That should like make you feel good as a lady. They're like, hey, I'm that important to him. I don't care who's calling. I don't care how many times they call. I'll get a hold of you later, right? That's just how it is. I can get a text message or my phone's always kind of going off and Paige is always like, what's that? And I'm like, I don't care what that is. That's what that is. It doesn't matter. I'll look at it later. Try to appreciate that. Guys, when you understand that like you have to actually work at it a little bit, when you have to do all the things just right, appreciate that about her because you know what? She's wanting to make sure that you know her. She's wanting to make sure that you know all the things that get her going. Because when you do those things, now all of a sudden she's like, he knows everything about me, and he can have everything about me. Try to appreciate the things that you don't understand because God created them that way. It's one thing to know these things. It's another thing completely to try to see them and say, that's just how they are. Like, that's how God made them. Now, that doesn't mean, very quickly, and we'll move to the next point, that doesn't mean that when your husband is gawking at some other lady, you're just like, well, he's created visual. Not at all. That's stupid, right? The point is, like, you in the confines of marriage, okay? And I'm saying, you can take any of these things and be like, well, it says, you know, you're supposed to, I'm saying, like, I'm enamored with you. I'm enamored with her, with him, okay? And so the point is, in the context of marriage, try to find these things that you don't completely understand and try to learn to speak that language just a little bit, right? Try to allow God to maybe show you what it is that they're thinking, what it is that they're feeling. You need to try to understand a different language. Okay, the third thing. Okay, I don't know how this is going to work, but I got to take a timeout and take a sweatshirt off because I am cooking. So I'm sorry, Brianna, if this goes all nuts for a second. Okay, the third how-to. How to grow mentally into a great lover. We're going to camp here for a minute because this is something that I had never really thought much about until I read this book that I was talking to you about. And there were some things in there that really, I'm an internal processor. You can tell me something, you can show me something, I can read something, and I need to kind of like mull it over for a while. I need to kind of think through it, make sure that, you know, I understand what they're saying, that my mind is tracking with them. You know, some guys are like that. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. It is what it is. But anyway, so I've read through this, and I kind of was thinking through it because it's something I never really thought too much on. But the more that I've thought it through, I'm like, there's a lot to that. And so I want you guys to really perk up because I think you're going to hear something here that maybe you haven't heard before, and it will help you grow, okay? So how to grow mentally into a great lover. Another way for me to say this is your bed is only big enough for two. Your bed is only big enough for two. And the two, you and your wife are one flesh. That's just one. right? Jesus is the other, just so we're clear. Your bed's on. So here's what I mean when I say we need to grow mentally into a great lover. We got to stop bringing other people to bed with us. We have to stop bringing other people to bed with us. Now, if you've got like the neighbor lady coming to bed with you, obviously you need to stop that too, dummy. Like, whatever. If you got something like that going on, I don't know why you're even, like, okay. Here's what I mean when I say this, and I'm going to take a little bit of time to do my best to explain what I read through on this. So here's what we do. Remember, this class is called Redefining Expectations, right? And so we will call them expectations when I talk about these things, but we could also call them preconceived ideas. We could call them a lot of things, but because it sticks with the way we're talking about in the class, we'll call them expectations. We have to stop bringing other expectations to bed with us, right? And so here's what that means. We grow up in different homes, right? Obviously, you didn't marry your brother. You didn't marry your sister. You married somebody that's completely different than you, right? I think we understand that. Very different. We grew up in different homes. We grew up in different backgrounds, right? Different liberalities and different things. Some people may have went to church. Some people may not have. We dressed different ways. We did different things. Everything about it. And so your entire life is built on this precept of these things are acceptable and these things are not, right? When it comes to anything, no different when you talk about sex. In the home that you grew up in, maybe sex was referenced all the time, and it was no big deal. Maybe it was never referenced. It was taboo. We didn't ever talk about things like that. You know, maybe, you know, it doesn't matter. Maybe it could be anything, right? I grew up in a home where, not me, but I'm just saying, maybe you had this idea where, having intimacy with my spouse with the lights on is just absolutely crazy. Why would we do that, right? And other people are like, well, I thought we were supposed to do it in the kitchen. I don't know. And like, there's all these different, thought processes of all these different expectations, if that's what we want to call them, that we come to marriage with. And they're all things that you've gleaned from other people, right? From different, maybe they're friends that you've had conversations with, and, oh yeah, that's totally fine. Well, no way. And so you have all these things. Well, then all of a sudden you're married to this person. And most people don't do any kind of premarital counseling, or they don't do premarital counseling right, and they don't ever talk through things like this. And so now all of a sudden you're married to a person, contractually bound in a covenant relationship with the Lord, that says, you got to figure it out. Well, this is where the phrase leave and cleave comes in huge. Most people are like, it's not that hard for me to leave mom and dad. Like, see you later. I couldn't wait to get out the house. But it's completely different when you have to start thinking about, I've got to leave their thought processes behind. I've got to leave their go-tos, their goods, their bads, all of the things that they thought were okay, right? Some of us grew up in homes where it was totally fine to, I don't want to throw him under the bus, but I used to work with a guy who was really, really good friends with Tyler's dad. And he's like, I could tell you stories of Tyler when he was yay big, and, he'd cuss like a sailor. I'm like, that's not the Tyler I know. We all grew up in different backgrounds, okay? And different things were okay and different things weren't. So the point is, now you're in this relationship, you've got all these different expectations, sexual expectations as well. And so now we come to bed with these expectations, and your husband's like, hey, let's try some candles. And you're like, absolutely not. I don't want you to see me. Or, hey, let's, I don't know, whatever it may be. I don't know what it is in your marriage, and I don't want to start giving out examples. The point is, we have these, like, we can do whatever except for that, or that, or that, or that. Well, why? Well, I don't know, right? Because it's wrong. Why is it wrong? So here's what we've got to do. The point is, like, when you start to really think about it, and you think back on maybe past experiences or things that you've been taught or trained or thought you knew, you have to understand, okay, are these true? I don't know. Okay, you need to work these things out with your spouse. And I'm going to tell you how to do this. I'm going to give you a very easy outline of how to do this. So I'm not just, again, I'm not just like saying, hey, figure it out, peace out. I'm not doing that. I'm going to give you an outline. But that's what I'm talking about. We all have these kinds of things that we bring into the marriage with us. Now, some of us have been married for a long time, and we're like, well, I think we figured it out. But have you? Are there still things that might be tripping you up? Are there things that you've just decided that, well, I guess that's just never going to happen because it's like a roadblock for them? At the end of the day, if it is a roadblock for them, don't push it. Like, there's no reason for that. But I'm just saying, there's no reason to be bound by something that has nothing to do, and there's no scriptural evidence that says you can't. So here's what we're going to talk about. If you don't leave the mental expectations, you will never truly cleave, like the Bible says. If you don't leave those mental expectations behind, well, I thought she was going to, you know, dress up every night. Well, he thought that I was going to put something on, right? Or whatever, like, whatever it is. If you don't leave those expectations, you're never truly going to cleave. Don't let somebody else's convictions become your doctrine. I've said this about a lot of things, but you need to understand that. Just because somebody else was super convicted over something, but it doesn't say anywhere in the Bible that it can't be, don't let somebody else's convictions become your doctrine. You know, some people think that when they come to church, they have to wear a suit every week. That's fine if you want to. And if you're convicted about it, man, by all means, wear it. I'm just saying it doesn't say that in the Word of God, and I'm not going to. That's fine. I might every now and then. But, you know, again, don't let somebody else's convictions become your doctrine. Just because, you know, your mom told you that it was completely taboo to make love with the lights on, is there really anything wrong with that? Or I'm trying to use something very basic, guys, because we could get really off in the weeds here, and we don't want to get there. But the point is, like, you can use your imagination on some of the things we might be talking about. Again, you want to get in detail on some of these things, I've got a really good book for you to read. I encourage you to read it with your spouse. So how do I do this? I understand you're telling me I need to leave these things behind. How do I do this? I'm going to give you a very, very basic outline. How do I make my brain not think something it's thinking? Because have you ever thought that? It's easy to say, hey, don't think that. Well, how do I make my brain not think something that it's thinking? I can't, like, tell my brain don't think that. Like, it doesn't work like that. So here's what we're going to talk about. I'm going to give you just a four-step process of how to do this. Here's the first step of figuring this thing out. Identify the quote-unquote expectation. Identify it. Find out what it is that's in your mind that is like, for whatever reason, I just feel like it's complete, we shouldn't be able to do that. Or whatever reason, I think that we should do that, and they don't think that. And right. So whatever it is, and maybe you'll have to do this several times over several things, depending on what all it is that you're bringing to bed with you. Identify it, right? Ask God to reveal anything to you that may be bringing, ask God to reveal anything to you that you may be bringing that's a hang-up or a stumbling block or whatever. Ask God. Psalms 139:23, David says, "Search my heart, O Lord." If you ask him, he'll do it. But be careful praying this, because sometimes you don't want to know what God's going to tell you. So anytime you ask God, hey, search my heart, be ready, because, I mean, he's totally ready. So you want to know the first step? Identify it, whatever it is. Identify what it is that it's just like, this is kind of like a thing. And I don't know if it's, you know, I brought it in, or maybe she brought it in, or he brought it in, and I don't know what it is. Identify it. That's the first thing you have to do. Identify it. The second thing that you need to do to kind of get over this, like, how do I make my mind not think what it's thinking? Do the say it out loud test. Have you ever heard this? The say it out loud test. Sometimes we think things are just completely ridiculous. Or we think things are like, well, you can't do that. And then you say it out loud and it's like, well, maybe it's not really that bad. Like, sometimes you just need to say something out loud. Like, whatever, I'm not going to get there. Ask God if it is scripturally wrong. Whatever it is that you're hung up on, you know, mom used to say this, dad used to say this, we never talked about that, you know, we never joked about that, whatever. Ask God if it's scripturally wrong. Again, if you ask God, he will reveal it to you. I know the Lord that well, okay? If you ask him, he will tell you. And if you honestly aren't getting an answer, ask somebody that you trust, a spiritual leader, okay? I can tell you what the Bible's got to say about sex, a lot of it, and we might get there tonight, and we might not in depth, but the point is, like, ask God to ask him, if is this scripturally wrong? If not, then say it out loud. Say what out loud? Say, God never said this was wrong. When you say it out loud, like, well, I've always thought that that was really messed up. I've always thought that you couldn't do that. I've always thought that, you know, whatever it is. And then you study it out, and it's like, I don't see it. Okay, maybe let's see what you need to do. God didn't say this was wrong. When you hear that, when you hear yourself say that, God, this is not wrong in God's eyes. Well, then whose eyes is it wrong in? Well, I don't know. Sometimes you need to do the say it out loud test. Like, oh, maybe it's not that wrong. Right? And your husband's like, I've been thinking that. Or your wife's like, man, I've been trying to tell you. Well, whatever it is. Like, okay. The third thing you got to do. So you identify it. You do the say it out loud test. Here's the third thing you got to do. You got to cast it down. It's one thing to know what it is and to know that it's not wrong. You've got to cast it down. If God is not against it, then you shouldn't be either. Amen? If God is not against it, you shouldn't be either. Cast the false imagination down. 2 Corinthians 10:5 is a verse that talks about we need to cast down false imaginations in every thought thereof. Okay? I don't have time to go to all the verses because we are running way behind on time, but I want to make sure we really walk through this stuff. Identify whatever it is. Say it out loud. God's not against this. Well, then am I? Okay, cast it down. Get rid of it. God said this is fine, and I'm going to get, this is no longer a hang-up for me. Right? Cast it down. And then number four. And you can do the first three steps, and if you don't do number four, you really didn't get anywhere. Number four, enjoy your liberty. Enjoy your liberty. Man, we're going to have all the lights on tonight, right? We're not even going to use the dimmer. Right? Whatever, like I'm just staying with the one analogy, okay? Whatever, enjoy your liberty. If it's not wrong, like, enjoy your liberty. Once you have it cast down, enjoy being liberated. Maybe even initiate that very thing. You want me to do what? I was just going to allow that to happen next time it came. No, maybe you need to initiate that very thing. Your spouse might be amazed at how much you've grown. I'm not trying to encourage anybody to do anything that is scripturally wrong. Never. What I'm saying is a lot of times we bring a lot of baggage into our marriage, sexually included. So we got to be careful. You've chosen to give this person your everything forever. Don't say you can have my everything except for this, this, and this because mom said it was bad, because my friend over here said it was bad, because my previous boyfriend said it was bad, because my previous whatever. Okay, you see what I'm saying? Covenant relationship. They get all of you. But I understand. It's not like, well, I can't just not think what I'm thinking. Okay, that's the four-step plan. That's how you get the things that are in your mind out of your mind. God does those things. One more thing I need to say about this point, and then we'll move to the next one. Previous sexual partners and premarital sex can also have huge mental hurdles in the marriage bed. Things that maybe somebody else did that your spouse doesn't. Maybe things that you did when you were before you got married, and now you don't do those things. Like, again, this is why God created sex to be in the marriage only. Again, this is why I'm saying, like, if you think you need to have sex, you need to find somebody to get married to. I'm just saying, these kinds of things, they can be huge hurdles. And sometimes things like this take real counseling, not just like, oh, we'll get over it, oh, we'll move past it. Like, sometimes it's really hard to get past that. Well, maybe you don't want to, but like every time if you're early on in a marriage and, you know, every time I want to be intimate and, you know, we start doing this one thing or whatever, my ex-boyfriend from wherever always pops into my mind. Well, you don't want to tell your husband that because, you know, that's not, maybe there's actually some counseling that needs to happen. Again, this is why it is so important. Man, keep it in your pants until you are liberated to not to, okay? Like, I don't know how else to say it, okay? And again, we can't go back in time. But man, we can teach our kids. We can change the generations moving forward if we start making the right choices now. Okay, the fourth thing. I think we're on track. I was thinking we would get through five. I have eight. I was like, if I can get through five tonight, we're doing pretty good. I think I'm on track. Okay, the fourth thing. Are you tracking with me on that last point? Because there's actually some stuff there. And I think as you mull on that, you might really start picking up what I was saying. But I think there's some real things that could be liberated in your marriage, in your marriage bed with that last point. Like, the more I started thinking through that, I'm like, I can really see where this could be a hang-up for a lot of people with different things. And so I hope you guys just mull through that. There was something there. God was saying something there. Okay, number four. How to. This is the one you've been waiting for all night. How do I get my spouse to want me? Right? How do you get your spouse to want you? Here's what I call this one. The art of seduction. Why are you laughing? The art of seduction. Now here, I want to make sure we understand this. Seduction's not a bad thing inside the confines of marriage. Now, there's a lot of places biblically that it talks about, you know, we can be seduced by a strange woman, we can do all. Seduction is not a bad thing inside the confines of marriage. Does that make sense? Finding ways to make your spouse desire you is godly. Did Jesus not find ways for us to desire him? He would, you know, he did things, he would do miracles to what? To get our attention on him, to do different things. Finding ways to make your spouse desire you is a godly thing. The art of seduction. Let me just be completely black and white with you. Ladies, you have it so easy when it comes to this. Guys, you got to work so freaking hard. I ain't lying. Like, we'll get there. How each of us do this is very different. Okay, guys, we've got like a long list. And this isn't the only ways, but I'm just going to give you some tips here, okay? And ladies, we got a list too, but it's not near as long. Guys, here's the art of seduction for us. Let me just tell you this. And if you've tried this, I'm not surprised it didn't work. It didn't work for me either, right? We can't just walk out of the bathroom with some lingerie on and think that it's going to do the trick. You can't just like come flaunting out of the bathroom and think she's just going to be like, yes! I don't know why. It just doesn't work like that. Leaves it in for me. I'm totally kidding, kind of. No, really kidding. Women love to be pursued. But that doesn't mean that you start the pursuit. Now, understand this, guys, because this is what we do. And I say we because I've been there. And so just, women love to be pursued. That doesn't mean that you start at her chest so you can eventually end up in her pants. That's not pursuit, okay? It's not, I'll start here so I can work my way there. That's not pursuit, just in case you're wondering. I think you understand that, but I just need to make sure you understand, somebody who's listening online maybe. Pursuing your wife starts in the morning. And I don't mean like that, right? Pursuing your wife is an all-day affair. It's an all-day thing. It's an all-day pursuit. Here's some examples. This doesn't mean that if you do all these things right in a row, it's going to work every time. There's no every time going to work. But here's some things, right? This is what I'm talking about when I say all-day pursuit. It might start with a sweet note in the morning before you leave, that something that she can stumble upon before she leaves the house or before she starts her day. Hey, babe, love you. Can't wait to spend some time with you later. Whatever. Just something really sweet. Something little. Something, right? Something to let her know that you're thinking about her, not naked, at least at this point, right? Whatever. Just something that allows her to know that you appreciate her. I'm really glad that, you know, whatever. Something sweet, right? Maybe it's this is what Paige and I do. I text song lyrics to her. Or she'll text song lyrics to me. Or even better, I'll like text a song lyric to her, and then she'll send me like the next line back, and I'm like, I forgot what that one said. You know, sometimes. And so whatever it is that works in your marriage, something sweet, like a phrase that you have, right? Or for the longest time, and not that this is not there anymore, we just kind of do the song lyric things, but our phrase was, I sure do just love you. I don't know why that's what it was, but it was the phrase, I sure do just love you. And I would text that to her, and she would text that to me just randomly. And it just lets her know. It was my way of letting her know that throughout the day, when she's busy, when I'm busy, for whatever reason, it came across my mind, and I took 3 seconds to let her know that, hey, I'm thinking about you. That's pursuit. That's letting her know that, hey, he's thinking about me other than when we're in bed together. Do you understand what I'm saying? You're learning seduction. Being engaged with raising the kids. Hey, there's a way, right? Actually be a part of helping with homework. Actually be a part of, you know, helping with whatever, helping with baths when they're little, helping with all the things, right? Be engaged with that. Tell her how beautiful or sexy that she is when you're not taking her clothes off of her. It seems like those things are always easy to come out of your mouth when you're not actually engaged. Well, you know, maybe even a time when you know that that can't actually happen, right? Maybe the next time now, I see this is what you're going to do. You're all going to do this tomorrow morning. Maybe the next time you're walking into church when you know that, hey, there ain't nothing going to happen when we're in the church, I think you're the most beautiful, sexy woman in the world. Because why? It lets her know that, like, even when he can't take my clothes off me right now, he thinks that I'm amazing. Things like that, right? Okay, well, I'm just telling you, that one probably isn't going to work tomorrow because I just gave you that one. But anyway, things like that. Letting her know that she is important, she's it for you, even when it isn't happening, okay? Helping her with her daily tasks. One of the things I've learned about my wife is she loves it when I help her in the kitchen. Now, here's what she really loves, is she loves for me to be in the kitchen pretending like I'm doing something but not messing up with what she's doing. Like, don't do that. Like, that's going to, like, but she wants me to be there, right? And so, you know, I use Tyler's phrase all the time. I'm like, what can I do to help without really getting involved? You know, whatever I can do, but she wants me to be around, be a part of what's happening. I'm not going to go sit down and watch TV while you make dinner. I'm not going to go, you know, which I wouldn't do that anyway. I'm not going to go pop in front of the computer and answer emails or, you know, whatever it is in your life that's a hang-up. I hate to be like that, but sometimes ministry is a hang-up. Sometimes, you know, those kinds of things. Like, I work all day, and it's like, okay, now I got to go through my emails and see, like, I got this to answer, this to take care of, I got papers to grade, I got a test to get going for, like, that's not helping our marriage. So understand that, be a part of what's going on. That's the art of seduction. Do something that she loves to do more than something that you think she likes to do. Like something that, here's one, and I'm actually going to give you an opportunity to do this later, but write her a letter explaining how you see her. I don't say a note, a letter. Like, when's the last time you actually wrote your wife a letter? Like, more than three sentences. Like, write her a letter. Just, these are just examples, things that you can do to let her know that, hey, I'm after you. You know I'm after you, but guess what? I'm after all of you, not just that part. Because she's not stupid. She understands you're after her, all of her. But she wants to know that you're after all of her, right? Not just that. Let me give you a few. If you got your Bible, flip over to Song of Solomon. This book, if you've ever thought, the Bible really doesn't say anything about sex, you're wrong. This book right here is borderline erotic. This book is, when you read it and really read the words and what it's saying, you're going to be like, it says what? I'm not going to get into that kind of stuff. I'm going to let you actually read it for yourself and allow God to reveal to you what is happening here. But I'm just saying, like, if you're going to be like, the Bible doesn't say anything about sex, you're wrong. Okay, let me read a couple passages to you. You want to know what it means to pursue your wife? Song of Solomon chapter 1. Let me just read a little bit of this to you. Verses 9 to 16. This is what you should say to her, right? This will work every time. Just listen. Just listen. He says, I have compared thee, O my love, to a company of horses and Pharaoh's chariots. Man, if that doesn't get her going, I don't know what will. Thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels, thy neck with chains of gold. We will make thee borders of gold with studs of silver. While the king sitteth at his table, my spikenard sendeth forth the smell thereof. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. He shall lie all night betwixt my breasts. My beloved is unto me as a cluster of campfire and vineyards of Ingledi. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes. Stop laughing at me. Behold, thou art fair, my beloved. Yea, pleasant. Also, our bed is green. Let me flip over. Song of Solomon, chapter 7, verses 1 to 9. Again, you want to get her going? This is what you got to do, guys. Verses 7, verses 1 to 9. He says, how beautiful are thy feet with shoes, O prince's daughter. Thy joints of the thighs are like jewels. The work of thy hands is cunning workmen. Thy navel is like a round goblet, which wanteth not liquor. Thy belly is like a heap of wheat set about with lilies. Thy two breasts are like two young roes that are twins. Thy neck is like a tower of ivory. Thine eyes like fish pools of Heshbon by the gate of Bathrabim. Thy nose is the tower of Lebanon. Man, baby, your nose is like the tower of Lebanon. Man, if that doesn't get her going, I don't know what will. I lost my spot. Which looketh towards Damascus. Thy head upon thee is like Carmel, and thy hair of thine head like purple. The king is head in all the galleries. How fair and pleasant art thou, O love, for delights. This statute This stature is like to a palm tree, and my breast to clusters of grapes. I said, I will go into the palm tree. I will take hold of the boughs thereof. Now also thy breast shall be clusters of the vine, and the smell of thy nose like apples, and thy roof of thy mouth like the best wine for my beloved that goeth down sweetly, causing the lips thereof to... Man, guys, you got to learn how to talk to her. You got to learn how to pursue her. One more, Song of Solomon, chapter 4. You got to learn the art of seduction. Behold, thou art fair, verse 1. Fair, my love, behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Thy hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Mount Gilead. Man, that's sweet right there. Thy teeth are like a flock of sheep that are even shorn, which come up from the washing, whereof every one bear twins, and none is barren among them. Thy lips are like a thread of scarlet, and thy speech is comely. Thy temples are like a piece of pomegranate within thy locks. Thy neck is like the Tower of David, builded for an armory, wherein they hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty wind. Thy two breasts are like two young roes that are twins, which feed among the lilies. Until the daybreak, until the shadows flee away, I will get me to the mountain of myrrh, unto the hill of frankincense. I wonder what they're talking about there. Thou art fair, my love. There is no spot in thee. Come with me from Lebanon, my spouse, with me from Lebanon. Look from the top of Amana, from the top of Sharon and Haman, from the lion's dens, from the mountains of the leopards. Thou hast ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. Thou hast ravished my heart with one of thine eyes, with one chain upon thy neck. I'm getting to where I'm going, so keep with me. How fair is thy love, my sister, my spouse? How much better is thy love than wine, and the smell of thine ointments than all spices? Thy lips, O my spouse, drop as honeycomb. Honey and milk are under thy tongue, and the smell of thy garments is like the smell of Lebanon. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Thy plants are an orchard of pomegranates with pleasant fruits, campfire and spikenard, spikenard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with the trees of frankincense, myrrhs and aloes, with the chief spices, a fountain of gardens, a well of living waters, a stream from Lebanon. Okay, and it stops right there. And then the very last verse, that's all been him talking about her. The very last verse of this chapter is her response to that. We'll get to that in a minute. Your wife wants to know that you're after her. You got to learn how to say it. Now I understand. Telling her that her teeth are like goat's teeth that are even shorn, that might not do it today. But at the time, you got to learn your spouse. You got to know. When you genuinely pursue her and make her feel wanted, both inside and out, here's what happens. Now, here, let me hear it. When you genuinely make her feel like you want all of her, not just her body, but like you want every last bit of her, you want her mind, her soul, her spirit, you want everything, and you just laid everything out, like you wrote it the best way you could, goat's hair and goat's teeth and all, like, here's what happens. When you're just genuine, you know what her response is? It's verse 16. This is her response. It says, awake, O north wind. This is her. Like, I can't speak in a woman's voice. Awake, O north wind. Whatever. And come, thou south, blow upon my garden. I wonder what that is. That the spices thereof might flow or may flow out. Let my beloved come into his garden and eat his pleasant fruits. You learn how to seduce her the way that she wants to be seduced. You learn how to let her know that you're after everything, not just that. And she knows that that's actually, you know, you're not just after, you're after her. You know what her answer is? You come and have all this garden you can have. Like, it's yours. Like, you think I'm lying? I'm just saying. Like, I've seen some things. You just have to learn what gets her going. You got to learn how to talk to her. Okay? I'm guessing it's not goat's teeth and fur and stuff, but maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not going to get to point five, but I'm going to get to the ladies here. Guys, you got to learn the art of seduction. It's hard. I'm just going to tell you. It's hard to do. You got to learn her, right? Remember, dwell with her according to knowledge. So we talked about last week out of 1 Peter. That's what you got to dwell with her, ladies. It's not that hard. Here, you want to know the art of seduction, ladies? Here we go. You might think that learning how to actually not make your husband want sex would be more beneficial, but be careful, right? There's times that I think my wife's like, is there any way that you couldn't turn that into a sexual innuendo or a sexual reference? And like, obviously, in our marriage, we kind of have a running joke, but it's, anyway, like, you might think, I don't have to try, Jason, so I don't know why you're even telling me this. Well, I'm getting there, and we'll stop after this point. There will come a day, ladies, when the tables will turn, and you'll find yourself actually having to quote-unquote try to get him going. And we'll get to more on this later when we start to talk about sex and different seasons of life, okay? I'll just give you a little tidbit. There comes a point where most guys, things aren't just as reactive as they used to be, and they don't just worry. Like, it's just a physical act of nature. And guess what? Now all the things that you thought all you had to do was just walk by, it just doesn't work like that. It's not because he doesn't. It's just different, okay? So there will be a time. So don't think that you don't need to know how to seduce your husband, okay? There'll be a day. We'll get to that later next week. Ladies, just because it doesn't take him as long to get there doesn't mean he desires being pursued any less. You need to understand that. Just because all you have to do is walk in front of him doesn't mean that he doesn't want to be pursued any less than you do. Understand that, ladies. He is extremely, 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 a whole lot, I don't know how else to say it, extremely visual. So if I was a lady, which I'm not, I use that to your advantage. And let me just tell you, he's going to think that you're moving mountains to chase after him. Use the visual aspect that you have in his eyes. Man, use that. And your husband is going to think, she would do anything. She would chase after me to the moon. And you're like, man, all I had to do was, I'm just saying. Use it to your advantage. Here's something that you need to know, and I'm just saying this from being a husband and also just being real with you from knowing men. If you never initiate or if you never pursue him, internally, he's going to begin to question if he's really wanted at all. If you never take the initiative, now I understand, most of the time he's going to, he'll do it for you. If you never do, if you never do anything to, hey, however you do it, right? Like, not all of us can do the Joey Tribbiani, right? How you doing, right? Not everybody's got that. Some of you get that reference. Like, not everybody, I'm just saying, if you never do that, eventually, he'll start to wonder, is she even interested at all? Song of Solomon, chapter 3, verses 1 to 5. I'm not going to read a whole bunch to you this time, just a few verses. Now, this is what she says about him. By night, on my bed, I sought him when my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. I will rise now and go about the city in the streets, and in the broadways I will seek him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. The watchmen that go about the city found me, to whom I said, saw ye him whom my soul loveth? But it was but a little that I passed from them, but I found him whom my soul loveth. I held him. I would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house, into the chamber of her that conceived me. I charge you, O you daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that you stir not up, nor awake my love till he please. She's chasing him. She's trying to get his attention. Just because you think you don't have to because there's enough of that going on already, I'm just saying, he needs to be chased as well. Now, I understand you don't have to do it every day because a lot of times he's going to. Find time. You'll make him feel like the king of the world. She shows that she's willing to go after him too. Verses 9 to 16 in chapter 5 gives her own list of things that she thinks he is, and they're just as oddly funny as the things of the goat's hair and goat's teeth, and you can read that on your own because I'm over time. She has her own list of, like, he is, let me just give you one of them because it's really funny. chapter 5, verses 9 to 16. It says, what is my beloved more than another, O fairest among women? What is thou another beloved? My beloved is white and ruddy, the chiefest among 10,000. His head is as most fine gold. His locks are bushy. Like, what? Again, but she's trying. I'm telling you what, guys, if your wife's trying, it's worth something to you, isn't it? I'm saying. Two more points, two more little phrases, and we'll be done. If sex is always, ladies, if sex is always just something that you quote-unquote give in to, then you're missing out. And yes, I did say that you're missing out. Because you might be like, no, he's missing out. No. If sex is just something that you're just giving into when he wants it every now and then, you're missing out. Because if you make him feel wanted, you would be amazed at the change you see in him in bed. You might be like, he can do what? I'm just saying, like, when you make a man feel empowered, I don't know. It's just, make him feel like he's the king, and he's going to treat you like you're the queen. When each of you learn the art of seduction in your marriage and actually use it, don't be surprised when now looking back at the honeymoon seems mild compared to today. Picking up what I'm throwing down? I figured. Okay, I got a lot more to say, but we're out of time. We're going to get the next four next week. There's a lot more to say, but that's the first four how-tos when it comes to good sex in your marriage. I'll figure out how to make all this still fit in 8 weeks, but I understand how important this is. I just do. Y'all might be like, oh, no, it's not really, but I see the look in your eyes as you're looking at me. I see the way that you're looking at me when she's not and she's looking at me when you're not. I get it. This is important. We're going to take our time working through this, and we'll make it up somewhere else. Here's your task for the week. This is one I've been looking forward to. I want you to read the book of Song of Solomon sometime this week. It's only like 8 chapters, but they're very short. Some of them I read the entire chapter to you as I was reading through it. Read through it slow. And like, try to actually see what's happening here. Like, I'm telling you, there is some seduction, there's some intimacy happening. When you try to think that the Bible is not really an intimate book, it is, okay? Read the book of Song of Solomon, and here's what I want each of you to do. Because y'all laugh when it says that her teeth are like goat's teeth, the shorn all straight and whatnot, and, you know, he's like white and ruddy, and, you know, you're like, if I tried that with my wife, she'd be like laughing at me. Write her a letter and explain to her what she is to you, body and all, right? Use your own comparisons. Write your own poetry. You might be like, I don't do that. Okay, here's what I'm just going to say. Any of you who are like, I'm not going to do that, well, don't be surprised when your spouse isn't like, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. It takes work. And here's the next thing I'll say. Write them a letter and read it to them. Whatever night that you've chosen, we're going to sit down and we're going to actually talk about this stuff. And I understand, if you're single, write a letter and the things that you desire in a spouse. And then be ready to read it to them on your marriage night. Okay? But here's what I'm saying to those of you who are married, okay? Write them a letter, like the things that you see them, like you know, from tip of head to all the way to the toes, all of the stuff, right? Write them a letter. Read it to them, and if here's what I'm going to say. This is the last thing I'll say, and we'll be out of here. And I'm not thinking of any one person when I say this, but I think it needs to be said. If any of you are like, well, we just don't have time. We've got too much going on. We don't have time for that. Here's what I'm going to tell you to do. Find a night and cancel whatever the heck's going on, because if your marriage isn't important enough to do what you're doing, then you're wasting everybody's time. I'm not saying, I'm just saying, if we don't start making our marriages the top priority other than Jesus Christ in our life, what are we doing? I'm not saying, I'm just saying. And there's a lot of people who need to get the main thing. Me first. Okay? So, like, your spouse needs to know that they're more important than chasing the kids to football games. Your spouse needs to know that they're more important than teaching HB, I'm just going through my own schedule, teaching D2, than whatever it is, looking at work. Who cares? I don't care how much work I got on the books if I end up divorced. Or my wife ends up so completely detached from me that, right? I don't care if I've taught the whole freaking church all the doctrine that there is in the book of Genesis if my wife doesn't feel like there's actually a connection there. You fill in the blank with whatever it is that you think you've got going that's so important that you don't have time to sit down for 30 minutes and invest in your marriage. Guys, I'm tired of the excuses of all of us because I do the same thing. Your spouse needs to know that they're worth it, and it needs to start now. You might think this is really stupid. Now, it's really stupid until you actually read something to your spouse and you see their eyes fill up with tears because it's like, I never knew you thought that about me. Tell me it's worthless. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. I'm just fired up. There's a lot more to say. So here's just a little, I'll give you number five and you can just start thinking on it because it's really good. Number four was, how to make them want you, how to make them want you. Here's number five, how to keep your spouse wanting more. That's what we're going to start with next week. Let's pray. Father, I love you. I thank you for today. Lord, you are so good and you are so merciful to us. And God, I pray that we would just really just lay down our junk and realize who you are in our life and realize that, man, you've given us something that is so important, living in our house, sleeping in our bed. And man, we're just too stupid to see it sometimes. So God, I pray that you would wake us up and make us realize that you have just blessed us beyond measure and that you would allow us to get beyond ourselves and invest in our marriage. God, I pray that these things that we've looked at tonight would be beneficial. I understand some of this is kind of like awkward and whatnot, but man, we all have sex in marriage. And if we can't figure out how to do it biblically, then we're wasting our time. So God, I pray you would just speak to us. Teach us, Lord, how to be more like you so that we can love our spouse the way that we ought to. Lord, I pray that each one in this room, you would just bless the sex in their marriage, the intimacy in their marriage, that they would be closer to you than ever. I pray for the single folks in here as they endeavor to step into marriage, that, Lord, that they would, man, just seek you first because you will provide if we're just patient. Lord God, I pray you would just use us to be the picture of Christ in the church, whether it be in intimacy or anything else, Lord. Just prepare our hearts even now for next week as we dive into the rest of this, and that you would get all the honor and the glory. I pray for each and one of these marriages. Protect them from the adversary because he's a punk.